Chapter 18. But by the next morning she hadn't. Zidorov woke, alone, and went through his morning routines. Malijah had gone out ahead of him. As ever, they were barely exchanging words, barely catching sight of one another. That was the price they both paid, the toll of duty in the municipal agencies. The Emperor protected, they'd always been told. He also demanded, so it felt like. He extracted. He laid the burdens heavily upon his subjects, never letting them rest, always asking for more. The familiar journey to the bastion passed in a fog of heavy rain. Away north, thunderheads were gathering. His scar, which had been dormant for a while, now throbbed incessantly. Once he arrived, he went straight to his cell. Brecht was not at his. Zidorov hung his drenched coat up, activated the terminal, and sat down. He put in a call.
Georgiou, this is Augusto. Where are you?
Out and about. What you want?
A favour. I'll come to find you.
Ha! I'll await with interest.
But there was work to do first. He inputted the clearances, then pulled up the feed from the personnel scanner he'd fixed to Udmil's ground car. While the cogitators were chuntering, he bought himself some caffeine and heated a jejune roll. He steeled himself for disappointment. The device might well have been detected, whatever Skribo's boasts about its capability. Even if it had survived, all he might get back was hours of useless footage, recording nothing of interest. It was soon clear that the first fear was unfounded. He had several hours of holo footage stored, and as far as he could see, the device was still functioning. He settled down in front of the main lens and started to analyse. He saw the ground car again, the black six-wheeled monster. Using a control column, he panned out, widening the scan range. The car was stationary, with the driver lounging outside, just as he'd left him. Nothing much appeared to be happening for a long time. Then the driver got a summons and started the engine again. Zidorov used the Holofield's logic engine to pan. In grainy, green glow outlines, he saw the private club Udmil had been visiting. It was odd to see the same gold statues again, this time translucent and flickering. The people in the street walked past, the same mix of strange hairstyles and extravagant clothes. Rainfall interfered with the Holofield's integrity, making the picture shake and stutter. He scanned forward. Udmil emerged after more than an hour. She looked much as she had done when he'd seen her in the flesh. Rake thin, severe, stepping gingerly as if contact with the ground might somehow infect her. As she emerged, the driver hurried to get the door for her. She got in, gave him his instructions, then settled into the huge seats of the passenger hold. The Holofield didn't preserve Ordex, but he could swivel the viewpoint to gain a close view of her face. Her lips were clamped tight, her gaze was steely. She did not speak to her driver once instructions had been given. She did not appear to look out of the windows at the view. She sat erect, her hands in her lap. Her first call was also in the commercial district, just a few blocks along. She left the ground car and entered a high-end clothier's, the kind of place he'd have to take a death loan out for. She left the ground car and entered a high-end clothier's, the kind of place he'd have to take a death loan out for in order to buy a new coat. He swiveled around to watch her enter and saw attendants hurry to assist her up the steps. He took a note of the location and time, then fast-forwarded the feed to her return. After that, she visited a place for lunch, where it appeared she dined alone. Then the ground car took her back to the mansion where he'd first encountered her. At no point did she behave like a woman consumed with fear, nor one resigned to bad news. She behaved as normally as her kind ever did. Presumably, this was the way many of her days played out. Visits to high-end establishments, occasionally dabbling in commerce, rounds of fine wine, fine food. Zidorov pushed through the next few hours, in which nothing happened. It was after nightfall when the next activity registered, and he followed the car out of the gates. This time, Udmil was dressed less conservatively. She wore jewellery, a large jetstone pendant and rings on her fingers. Her dress was tighter and lower cut than before, exposing a figure that was toned rather than skeletal. Udmil Tereshova had kept herself in rather good shape under all that exterior prudishness, whether by standard means or with some help from a friendly clinic. The journey took a long time, as if the ground car were deliberately tracing a circuitous route towards its destination. Eventually, it pulled up at a tower in one of the most exclusive areas of the inner city, not far from the centre of the guilt zones. The place looked much the same as Mordak's tower, except for the granite aquilas over the main gate and the neon blue flood lumens angled up at the turbulent sky. As the car pulled up in front of it, attendants hurried down a long flight of stone stairs to greet her, some bearing Scatterfield umbrellas. She was escorted inside with great ceremony and fawning, and the ground car pulled off. Zidorov paused the footage and dialed it back a few seconds. He swung the holofield around, aiming to get a better view of the building's frontage. Beside the grand entrance facade was a bronze plaque bearing the name of the tower, Imperial Garden Complex 7. He shunted the reference into the databanks and triggered a search for ownership and occupancy. Then he let the footage run again. The ground car pulled off to an underground lot, and after that, nothing moved. Soon it looked like the driver had fallen asleep in the front cab. Zidorov cycled it onwards, and the hours ticked by. He passed midnight, the time when he and Drash had been active up at the suborbitals. It was just before dawn, by the chronomark, when the next motion was detected, so he set the footage to play at real-time speed. The ground car drew up again at the same frontage. The chrono told him it was before the dawn shifts began, about an hour before first light. Zidorov angled the viewpoint back up at the steps, just in time to see the doors open. Udmil emerged from the glass doors, wearing the same clothes she'd arrived in. Her hair looked a little less tightly arranged, and she had a new pendant around her neck, an emerald possibly, though hard to tell through the hollow interference. She was escorted by a man in a dark suit, an overcoat close-fitting. The man walked unusually, as if he were heavier than he seemed. His face was pale, his hair dark, receding from a high forehead. He held her arm as they descended the steps, and then opened the door of the ground car for her. Udmil barely spoke to him. She inclined her head perfunctorily at the end, before taking her seat. Zidorov kept the viewpoint centred on the man throughout, freezing several static pics. Then the door closed, and the ground car drove off. The driver took Udmil back to the mansion, where she got out again. The vehicle then made its way to another secure lot, and the driver left too. After a little while, with some skips forward, the footage reached the present moment, and Zidorov cut the feed. He sat back in his chair and chewed over what he'd seen. The dark-suited man had been at the warehouse a few hours beforehand. That was the killer link. He was also likely an off-worlder. The way he carried himself, the paleness of his skin, the length of his face, the things he had half-guessed from the glimpses he'd had at the warehouse, now confirmed by clearer footage. All those things could be mimicked or eliminated as desired, but it remained probable that these were his original attributes. Such people were not common in Yorgiyina. As a rule, their services were highly prized, given what they knew about void trade and intrasector politics, so whomever he worked for was capable of paying significant slate. Elena's testimony had always made it possible that Udmil had been having an affair, and this footage now made it certain. But the affair wasn't with the dark-suited man. He was a functionary by his bearing, perhaps very highly placed, but a man who followed orders rather than gave them. No, there was someone else. Zidorov doubted that Udmil was the kind of woman to wait around for a host. So then, Udmil Tereshova was meeting someone in that building. Someone powerful, someone rich, someone whose majordomo also happened to be present in a warehouse up at the suborbitals crammed with bleeders. Things were coming together. Zidorov turned to the occupancy search. As expected, the records for such a tower were not easy to interpret. The owners were hidden behind a series of faceless shells and ghost entities, although the compilers of the Bastion archives had done their best to cross-reference with known beneficial owners. One name stood out, Galanta Holdings. This was a tradehouse front wholly owned by a woman named Alida Bronzer. Zidorov had come across the name before and knew that it was a pseudonym. He ran a check on it, and the true identity emerged from the Bastion's records. Avro Lasile. He felt his heart sink. He knew who Avro Lasile was. Everybody knew who Avro Lasile was. For as long as anyone could remember, Avro Lasile had been the power behind the Jash Corporation, the behemoth that straddled a dozen major commercial sectors, from heavy-lift cargo transit to cosmetics. Few entities in Yorgiyina could rival the Tereshovas for heft, but Jash eclipsed even them. He turned his attention to the pics he'd taken in the warehouse. These were of correspondence, written in cipher, low-level stuff most probably, though they'd chosen to use parchment, which meant that it was something they didn't trust to put over the comm grid. He pulled up a keyboard and entered a few of the phrases into the cogitator's storage, then ran some analysis. Nothing came back, which wasn't a surprise. A cipher wasn't much good if it had been cracked. He persevered. The last scrap of parchment looked slightly different from the others. As he peered more closely, he could see indentations at the top, very faint, as if made by a stamp on top of an enclosing sheet of parchment or plastic, perhaps a protective envelope. He zoomed in, trying to make out what the marks signified. He couldn't get it all, and it also looked to be numbers rather than legible words. He entered some characters from it and got a green lumen blink from the cogitator. Something had matched with a reference in its storage. He pushed for the match, and a single line of text scrolled across the lens. Standard location ident. Physical good transit batch processing. Habitation tower 34637. Zidorov already felt sure he knew the more familiar name of that tower, but he turned back to the static pict of the bronze nameplate. It was mandatory for every HAB tower to carry its identification number prominently on its frontage. He zoomed in close, and under the engraved words Imperial Garden Complex 7, he saw the reference as plain as day, LR34637. Zidorov stored the data on a separate file and closed down the terminal. He looked around him. No one seemed to be paying him any attention. A few probators were staring into their own terminals. Others were talking, absorbed in their conversations. He felt a mix of emotions. Now he knew who was bankrolling the warehouse. Now he knew who was running bleeders and sending the material off-world. Now he knew who had taken Adier Tereshova and who, in all likelihood, had killed him. And now he knew why. He got up, yanking his coat from the stand. "Coming to find you, Georgiou," he voxed, walking briskly from his desk and heading for the ground car depot. "It's time for that talk." It was in a bar, of course. There were times that Zidorov thought Breck basically lived in bars. This one was slightly smarter than the last one they'd drunk in, and it was quiet, which was good. They sat at a table in a private booth. Two glasses stood on the surface between them. Retzi for him, Geniza for Brecht. The atmosphere was clouded with Cotin, and there was a hum of conversation from the tables further down the room. An old chandelier hung from the ceiling, foxed and furred with dust. It smelled musty, with traces of incense. Brecht looked at him cautiously. "Run that all by me again." Zidorov sighed and took a long swig. "This is how I see it," he said. "It is basically how I saw it from the start. Adier Tereshova got involved with the Vidora when he was down in Gargoza. He hooked up with Yellowsnake, started to get ideas above his station. Maybe he really did want to impress his father. That's a surefire route to destruction, but he was young. And Mordax seems to be the only one of his family who didn't actively hate him. The problem was that the business making the Vidora all that money was cell-draining, and that's a dangerous game. Plenty of others wanted a piece of it, particularly now that the slate is bigger than it ever was. The stupid little shit was walking into a war, and he didn't even know it." Breck nodded. "Yes, I've got all that. What I don't understand is how you know it." "Because of what happened next. Udmil asked me to find him. She must have discovered what he was up to. And that led me, conveniently enough, to the Vidora, which led to the raid, the start of the purge. Only, quite by accident, this was rumbled by a cracked veil link. So, she had to prod us a bit more, make sure that we went after them properly. They took out Borodina because they knew the Vidora would be fingered for it again. Borodina was working on them after all, and by then we were just looking for a reason to hit them. If she'd died, we might never have questioned it, but even she couldn't ident her assailants when I spoke to her. So, there we were, being goaded like dumb groxers to take on a cartel, just when they were already being hammered by some shady newcomer we knew nothing about. We were used. We were used by Udmil to wipe out a rival. After we did her bidding, which we did so very well, she could just step in and take it all over. Adierd was a moron. His mother, legal mother anyway, wasn't. Brecht raised an eyebrow. "Maybe," he said unconvinced. "But the Tereshovas, I mean, they've got money. But still, it's a dangerous game. And why would Mordak..." "You're not listening to me, Georgiou," Zidorov said. "Mordak knows nothing about this. He never did. And it's not just Tereshova money. Udmil is hooked up with Avro Lasile now. Has been for a while, I guess. And that's where the real slate is coming from.
It's like the rejuve trader told me. Whoever's doing this is seriously rich. Richer than Yuti. Richer than Mordak. That's what it takes. This is Udmil's bid to get free of Mordak forever. She's now with Avro now, benefiting from all the protection Jash gives her. And they can buy the old man out many times over. They've pushed him out of the trade and, for all I know, killed his heir at the same time. It's brutal. Very brutal. And we help them to it.
But if you're right, then we can start again now. Get evidence, burn it all down.
Sidorov smiled dryly. And that's the problem. Von Geller's happy to burn Vidura. She could do that all day long. But Jash? Hells, they'd bankroll everything. You ever notice just how much kit we have with a Jash stamp on it? They're untouchable and they're legit. I could go to Castellan with all of this and I'd wake up the next morning with a bag over my head in a dark room. He shook his head. I remember where I saw the off-worlder now. It was months ago, at the handover for that Bulwark refuel station. I saw the way he and Avro talked to Castellan. I thought they all looked like family then, and I didn't worry about it. That's the way it's always been. But it's a problem now. Hells, it's a big problem now.
Breck thought about that for a while, then nodded grimly.
So walk away.
I can't.
Walk away, Zido. You spelled it out yourself. No one will help you.
You weren't in that warehouse.
I'm glad.
He leaned forward over the table.
I know what you want to do, and it'll get you killed. Think of Liger. Think of Naxi. You got used. Worse things happened to us. Ask Borodina.
It's going on right now, right as we sit here. It always has done.
You can't clean everything up, just what you can grab in both hands. This is too big for your hands, my friend. Too big for any of us.
Sidorov stared into his half-empty glass.
There are still things that bother me. When Udmil spoke to me that first time, I could swear she was genuine. The way she talked about her son. I don't usually get stuff like that wrong. And no one can tell me why she and Mordak ended up together in the first place, since they clearly loathe each other and always have done. The files are all empty. Things are hidden somewhere, I feel sure.
Breck laughed and gestured to the server to bring another round.
Too far down, too far down. Start digging there and you'll be working on your own grave trench. And if you wanted my help in this, that favour I'm supposed to owe you, then forget it. I'll do a lot for you, Zido, but I'm not crossing Jash.
I wasn't talking about that.
He finished the retzi.
Naxi's not been home for a couple of days. I figured maybe I could spare the time. Something like that.
Zidorov tilted his glass and watched the dregs run round the base of it.
I'm sure it's nothing. She's done it before, but, you know, you worry.
He didn't say anything more about the warehouse and how young the bleeders had been. That was his imagination running overtime, but still.
You could make inquiries yourself, Breck said wryly, as the fresh round of drinks arrived.
I tried. Come on, you're good at this kind of thing.
Breck raised his glass and chinked Zidorov's.
I'll do it, because I love you, Zido. I'd make it a condition that you drop this madness with Udmil, but I guess you're too stupid to listen to me.
They both drank.
I don't know,
Sidorov said, cupping his retzi in both hands and staring at it. I don't even know where I might go with it.
Then don't start.
Maybe, Sidorov took another sip. Maybe.